It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we look at the past, present, and future of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate amid some calls to get rid of it. First, adulthood can be boring, and our next guest says we should prepare our kids for that. She says we don't always give boredom enough credit. Unfilled space can be constructive, especially when teaching self-discipline, how to think for ourselves, and it can be a boost for creativity. Pamela Paul is the editor of the Book Review and oversees books coverage at the New York Times. She's the author of several books, including her most recent, My Life with Bob, Flawed Heroine Keeps Book of Books, Plot Ensues. She wrote the piece, Let Children Get Bored Again, for the New York Times. Pamela, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Are we as a society, and maybe as parents in particular, not ready to let our kids get bored?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but growing up, I was bored all the time. It was boring. It was boring. My afternoons were empty. Television in the afternoon was terrible. This was like back in the days of, you know, having to get up and physically change the channel. And it was like, you know, reruns of Gilligan's Island and the Brady Bunch. There just was not, it was not that good. And that was my problem. Nowadays, boredom, not only is it seen as a problem, but grown-ups are seen as the solution to that problem, which was not the case before. You know, decades ago, if you were bored, that was your problem, and it was your problem to get through and to figure out how to fix it. I feel like that whole idea has gone away.
Yeah, there's a temptation for adults to intervene, and I could see in some cases, I'm a parent and I'm totally guilty of this, in some cases, if you are with kids and doing something, you don't want to live with the consequences of a kid who's very expressively bored out of their minds. Is it okay to step in sometimes then?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have three kids, so I'm very familiar with bored kids, and I think that there is a lot of pressure on parents, and I think that there is this idea, first of all, most people are brought up, they have two working parents, and so the parents have very little time with their kids, and the time that you have, you want to kind of, you know, it's that quality time thing over quantity time, although there's the constant debate about which is actually the more important. But when you don't have a lot of time with your kids, you want it to be kind of intentional. You want to be able to figure out, like, what is the best way thing that we could do with this 1 hour that we have together. And so there's not the same kind of leisure of having, say, 4 hours with your child where you'd be perfectly content to kind of have them, you know, left to their own devices. I also think that, you know, parenting in general has become incredibly competitive, and there's this idea from a very young age that our children are sort of on a race to compete in this, like, ruthless game of life, and especially economically. So there's an idea, there's a kind of implicit understanding that if you want your child to be, quote-unquote, competitive, that you have to do something with their extra time, that their time shouldn't be, quote-unquote, wasted. It's as if we're constantly sort of putting money in the bank of our kids in the hopes that in the future they will then be equipped with everything they can have to succeed. And I think what's gotten lost there is that one of those things that actually will help them succeed, and again, I have a little bit of problem even with that term, but succeed, and I mean be fulfilled and be happy, is learning to cope with boredom.
Talk about the positives that come out of dealing with boredom for a kid.
Well, so when you are bored, right, when you are staring out the window in the backseat of the car, which I feel like nobody has to do anymore, and nobody ever really, like, puts on music that the kids hate anymore in the car that they have to suffer through. When you are staring out that window, your brain wanders. You have empty time. That's when your imagination sort of takes hold. That's where, even if you're staring at the most sort of semi-featureless stretch of highway, you begin to notice little things. You look up at the clouds. You see the trees. You notice the birds. You might notice something interesting about license plates that you've never noticed before. But you are sort of forced by that tedium into finding the interesting thing, either that's out there or that's internal, that's in your head. And we don't have to do that anymore. So it's like when we talk about one of the qualities that we want our children to have, resourcefulness, that's where you have to be resourceful because you literally have kind of nothing to play with necessarily, and you're forced to come up with that you know, sort of scenario that saves you from boredom.
Talking to Pamela Paul from the New York Times, she wrote recently about the value of boredom for kids and how the grown-ups, are maybe overfilling our kids' time with entertainment or productive activities. Pamela, as you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I see this with the kids. I kind of see this with me, too. There are many quickly available ways for me to fill my time that, yeah, why would I spend a second being bored? I'll play a game on the phone. I'll pick up a book. I'll listen to an audio, whatever. Are we adults hurting ourselves, too?
Oh, we definitely are. I mean, it's funny, when I first wrote this piece and when I was thinking about it, I really thought this is not just for us kids, it's for us adults. And one of the reasons, one of the sort of the triggers for me writing this piece, there were a few things. One of them was, I, like probably many other people, have thought to myself for the last 10 years, I should really learn how to meditate. Everyone who meditates is, you know, peaceful, more well-balanced, sleeps better at night, all these wonderful things. And so I did a little bit of research. We have this great guide online at the Times, like your guide to meditation. I read that. There was a column about meditating, and I thought, I really need to get down to it. I downloaded a few apps. I have a little reminder that pops up. I have yet to meditate. And I thought, why is it like that I need to fill up that little empty time that I have, and that frankly I don't even have, with something that is very intentional? I thought, why is it that we need to fill up that empty space? Like, what is it that, you know, it's like boredom isn't just a low cost version of meditation. In a certain way, it's actually very much the opposite, right? Because with meditation, you're supposed to like let go of those thoughts that enter into your mind. With boredom, you're doing the opposite. You're grabbing onto them. And I thought, like, that's actually what I really need to do, in a way, is instead of using my time on my commute to, you know, catch up on reading and doing and listening and everything that we all need to do all the time, actually what I should be doing is just looking out the window.
Have you in your life, can you point toward times when you've gotten good creative inspiration out of your boredom?
Yeah. I mean, I think two of the most boring things to me are falling asleep and taking a shower, right? And they're things that are inescapable. There's nothing you can do. I guess people put like radios in their showers or whatever. I've never gotten that creative. And it is not surprising that then the best ideas happen when I'm in the shower or when I'm falling asleep. I actually now keep a notepad with a pen by my bed at night, because when my brain is sort of freely wandering, even though I suppose, you know, I should be actually falling asleep, but during that boring, you know, trajectory into sleep, my brain starts to come up with ideas. And I'm often thinking, if I'm working on a writing project, that's when I'm thinking of things, or when I'm in the shower. So I often do find myself, you know, dashing out of the shower to try to go and write something down.
There seems to be this move toward optimizing our time lately. And this, I think, is true for our kids and for ourselves. So you're not just doing one thing. You're listening and learning Spanish while you shower, or, you know, listening to a book while you cook or whatever. Is that part of what's driving us away from having slack boredom time?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that urge to multitask, that sort of constant drive to up the ante, I think it's very dangerous. I mean, one of the other sort of inspirations for this piece was back to school night. So you go to back to school night, right? And all the teachers are talking about is trying to engage the children, trying to capture their attention, trying to, you know, get them to be excited. And they find it really hard. And I think to myself, you know what? When I was a kid, the teachers really weren't all that concerned about how bored we were or how inspired we were. They knew that sometimes information that you need to learn is not necessarily exciting, and that, in fact, that's part of the lesson, right? Part of the lesson that you are learning in school is not because you need to know the quadratic equation. It's because you need to tolerate the fact that you need to know the quadratic equation, right? It's the fact that you do not find something terribly exciting, and yet you need to learn it or put up with it in some way anyhow. So I think to myself, as I'm going to that back-to-school night, I'm thinking, I don't really want all this stuff to be that fun and exciting and engaging for my kids. In fact, I kind of would rather it be a little bit boring. Don't tell my kids. I hope they're not listening. But it's true. I think that part of what they need to learn is that acquiring information isn't always necessarily fun. That doesn't make it any less worthwhile or less important.
We're talking to Pamela Paul from the New York Times about boredom and its potential benefits. She wrote a piece headlined "Let Children Get Bored Again" for the opinion section there. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of boredom? Do you think we try to overfill our kids' time with productive activities, entertainment, you name it? Can you point toward a time in your life where you were glad you were kind of bored? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Pamela Paul is with us from the New York Times. She's the editor of the book review section there. We're talking with her about the benefits of boredom for kids, and she says we don't let our kids be bored enough. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think boredom can be useful? Does it teach us lessons? Do you look back on boring time as a kid fondly, or do you wish there'd been a smartphone to fill that time? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Teresa is with us in Madison. Teresa, hi.
Hi. I have two comments to make, actually, and obviously I wasn't born in this country, but the first comment is, I'm not sure whether this lady had or woman has studied education and how children learn, but I can assure you that if you sit a child in a class and they're bored stiff, they don't learn. What she's talking about, I think, is developing in children the understanding that not everything you do may be fun, but if you bore the hell out of kids, they'll just shut off. So I think she's totally wrong there. And if any teacher is listening, I hope they'll respond. But secondly, when I first came to this country in 93, I had two children. And I used to go to cooperative playgroups so I could talk to mums, American mums. And I was astonished the first Monday I went in when someone told me what they'd done. And that included an early breakfast, hit the market, then go for brunch, then go for something at the community centre, then go bowling, and then maybe we'll talk to each other. There's this incessant need in this country to be doing things as if you're not doing things, you're not using your brain. You know what the British do? They sit on the sofa and look at each other.
Teresa, thanks a lot for the call. Pamela, she half agrees, half disagrees with you. Let's take the disagree half. She says we can't allow too much boredom in schools. Kids aren't going to engage and learn then.
Well, you know, I have taught, and I've talked to a lot of teachers, and I've also talked to a lot of college professors who I think are getting the kind of brunt of this sort of upping the ante in terms of edutainment and a kind of increase in this entertaining form of education, because they find that by the time kids get to college, they are not willing to endure to sit through lectures, that it's sort of on them to entertain the kids, otherwise they're going to just go online, look at their laptop, sort of do something else. And I think that's because they haven't been properly trained to pay attention to information that might not necessarily be that fun. The other thing that I find is interesting that's changed a lot in the classroom is that there is a lot more use of screens, of websites, of quote-unquote, you know, edutainment or educational games, which, let's face it, are frankly video games and not necessarily educational. They may be entertaining. And also a lot more use of films in the classroom for history, for example, you know, rather than have a conversation or do some kind of lesson around the Civil War, the kids might end up watching Glory, for example. Well, you know what? They can watch Glory on their own free time. It's a great movie. I'm not saying anything against it. But to replace a lesson on that with a film then means the next time you try to do a lesson, that's not nearly as fun or entertaining as it was watching a major Hollywood movie.
And Teresa, on the other hand, saying she sees Americans in general, maybe young and old, wanting to fill our time up way too much. We should adopt the British system of sitting and staring on the couch. That is a little closer to what you're talking about, I think, Pamela.
That I like, yeah. I mean, you know what? Just have conversation. And just learn to make conversation. Like, that's a skill. And if you're not sort of forced and trained to do that, you don't develop it. I mean, there's all this discussion now of, like, kids not knowing how to you know, court one another off of a device, that all of it takes place in some way, shape, or form on a phone. That's kind of scary.
We also asked on Facebook whether people think we overschedule our kids or whether we allow boredom time. We heard from Gabe, who says only boring people get bored. And I think that's kind of a commonplace statement, Pamela. What do you think of that idea?
Well, yes. I mean, that was what we were told growing up. But I think that what the underlying meaning of that is that if you are bored, you have to learn how to do something about it. And that is what, you know, that is what you are forced to do when you need to endure boredom. But if you get rid of that training, right, then you don't learn that. Then I think actually paradoxically you do kind of become a boring person because you need to be entertained all the time. You don't have the inner resources to be able to handle it if you're constantly being, you know, having the problem solved for you.
We're talking to Pamela Paul from the New York Times about a piece she wrote on kids and boredom. She says we don't let kids have enough boredom, and that's getting in the way of their creativity, their independence. Back to your calls now. Caitlin is with us in La Crosse. Caitlin, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Caitlin?
So it was the piece about how teachers are trying to engage the students at every moment and trying to make the information exciting. And I see the point both ways, but I think that the hardest part for me to grasp is that her argument is that the students should, like, take a lesson out of learning that they might have to learn this monotonous information, even though it's not fun for them. And although that might work, if you have a parent who's at home saying, no, this is important, and reinforcing that, a lot of kids in schools don't have parents who are at home teaching them these same lessons and making learning important. So I think that's where the teachers really have to try and make the information engaging so that the students who don't have that reinforcement at home want to learn it.
Caitlin,
and that's where I think the disconnect is.
Caitlin, thanks for the call. Pamela, she says, yeah, teachers are in some ways trying to make up for what kids come in from home with.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, again, I don't know what your experience was like growing up, but when I was growing up, there was sort of no idea of, there was no concept of parent involvement. My parents never taught anything. That was the school's job. You know, they never reinforced any lessons. And what you learned in school was, on occasion, very boring. So, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I would say that it's very hard for a teacher to compete. If the parent at home is allowing the child to be constantly entertained, and then the parent, then they go to school, and by contrast, the teacher is the first one that's introducing this concept of, you know, not everything is fun all the time, I do think it's a really uphill battle. So it really is about the kind of, this needs to change on both fronts, because what you're doing is, if you're constantly upping the ante for entertainment in one sphere, then it's necessarily going to put a burden on the other sphere. So if it's happening at school but not at home, then it puts pressure on home and vice versa.
Thanks for the call, Caitlin. We heard from Karen on Facebook, who says, when my kids said they were bored, I'd say you wouldn't know excitement if you didn't know boredom. What do you think of that idea, Pamela?
Oh, I totally agree. You know, it's the same thing with art. You know, if you don't read a bad book or look at a painting that isn't great or see terrible theater or a dull movie, then you're not going to know what, you know, what a really good work of art is.
Now, I wonder, Pamela, is the barn door open and has been open too long? Is there any way to turn this back around and start to reclaim boredom?
I mean, absolutely. Look, most people, most adults, right, they're the ones in charge. It's up to the schools, to the teachers, to the parents. I'm surprised that, you know, parents give children as much access to digital devices as they do. Look, it's up to the parent. They could take it away. They don't have to give them a phone or a tablet or access to watch TV endlessly in the first place. That's the rule of the house. So if you deprive the child of these kind of very easy forms of entertainment, they're going to be the ones that have to come up with something on their own. And I also think, you know, and it's very hard. Look, I mean, I see this as a parent as well, but you have to be able to let go of, you know, the temptation to intervene yourself. So just because you're saying, oh, you can't play with the iPad in the afternoon, doesn't mean then that it's on the parent to swoop in and be like, and let's play this game instead. Sometimes you can just say, you know what, you have a room full of toys, a room full of books, figure it out.
All right, that's for the kids. Have you been able to put this into practice yourself and open up? You mentioned your non-experiment with meditation earlier. Have you, reinvented the staring on the couch time again or something like that?
I don't know that I've reinvented the staring on the couch, but for me, what I think can be challenging is to find, you were talking earlier about multitasking, is to really cancel out all the other noise so that I can sit and read something that might not be on the surface entertaining, and it might not be a fast-moving plot, and it might be a 1,000-page book, but to just sit there and to allow myself the time and the space to sink into it and to, give it time to develop. Like, there are some great novels that take 100 pages to get off the ground that, people used to be more patient and accustomed to a long Victorian novel that took some time to develop, and then you're sucked in. But for me, it's allowing the space and the attention to devote to that. But, I'm a book person.
Is this an attention span issue, too? Do you think a lack of boredom is making us flit from one thing to another more quickly?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's interesting. If you compare video games from the 70s, like you went to the arcade, right, and there was Asteroids. Okay, Asteroids, I don't know if you remember that, or Space Invaders.
Oh, yeah.
One of those very early arcade games, right? They were black and white. They were very simple pixelated lines. There was like two different functions you could have. There were very little rewards, right? And it was really hard. And you compare that to your average video game today, in which there's constantly bells and whistles and noise going off, and also you're constantly rewarded. It's like it's much easier to get the points. If you have a child that's grown up in that new video game arena, and you ask them to go back to something like Asteroids, it's incredibly frustrating, it's incredibly boring, it's really hard, and it's not that fun. Which is interesting, right? Because we've upped the ante. We've upped the expectation of what that kind of fun, immersive experience is.
Pamela, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Pamela Paul, editor of the Book Review at the New York Times. She's the author of several books, including her most recent, My Life with Bob. She joined us to talk about a piece she wrote in the Times called Let Children Get Bored Again. You can keep sharing your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up after the news, should the filibuster stay or should it go? We'll talk to a political scientist about the history of this political procedure, its role in dysfunction in the U.S. Senate, and what reforms could look like. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.